Jeff, I think you wanted to have a question with General McGee.
Yes, so General McGee, the Tuskegee Airmen, you guys escorted our heavy bombers flying out of Italy and striking targets in Austria, southern Germany, Czechoslovakia. Sir, could you talk about what it was like to escort the bombers and what your job was?
Indeed, we had great leadership that led us, I'd say, Reich, second first lieutenant, said, you're not here to go happy hunting to become an ace. You're here to help save American lives. And certainly we respected our leadership and stuck with the bombers and only dispatched elements if the German forces tried to attack the area that we were in escort. So it was the leadership that paid off. Of course, we were well prepared and ended up with a very excellent record we had flown 179 escort missions, and only on 172, there were no losses at all. So just a few, even though we were escorting, but the part of that problem is the bombers often could be well scattered and not in tight formation, and you can only cover so much ground, so much airspace, and so there were a few losses, but we ended up with an excellent record.
Yeah, to put that in perspective, General McGee was talking about that most of the raids at the Tuskegee Airmen escorted the bombers, there were no losses. The U.S. Army Air Force has lost 8,000 heavy bombers in combat, each one of those carrying 10 men. We lost thousands and thousands of these bombers. So that it's an extraordinary record to fly that many missions and have so few bomber losses while they were escorted.
Mm-hmm. So, indeed, that's the way it turned out. And certainly the research has shown that. So as I say, it was the leadership and our focus, and fortunately we were well trained for the task.
Now, sir, did you fly other types of missions before you started escorting the bombers earlier in your tour?
What type of missions?
Did you fly other types of missions in the P-39s or other fighters earlier?
No, all of our work, P-39, P-47. Well, P-39 was more interdiction. We patrolled Naples Harbor and the waterways to the Anzio beachhead. Four groups were picked to begin the escort work. And that's when we switched to the P-47 Thunderbolt, which we only had about 3 months. Then all four of the groups were flying P-51 Mustang.
And what was your favorite of those three?
Oh, ask old fighter pilot what your favorite is. P-51 Mustang, but you have to qualify it with the Rolls-Royce Merlin engine, gave us excellent aircraft to do the task, because it had could perform at a higher altitude and had better range than P-47 Thunderbolt. Great roomy cockpit with that radial nose and the big radial engine limited your range and altitude. So that's why the 51, you know, we built the 51 for the English and they put the Rolls-Royce Merlin engine in it and we said good.
Lucky was talking about flying missions. He was flying out of England, flying out of the UK. Now you were in Italy, flying missions out of Italy. What was it like? What were the airfields like? Were they well developed, or were they really rough? Or did you guys live in tents? Or
I don't think we knew what a well developed airfield was. They took a farmer's field and put down a pure steel planking runway, and we had tents on each end of the runway. And we had four squadrons, two at one end and two at the other. You didn't pay any attention to the wind. You took off when your time came. So it was a challenge, but as I say, we were well trained and ready for the task, and the results speak for themselves.
Thank you.
Jeff, did you want to ask some more questions?
Yeah, so we have more than one Tuskegee Airman here, right?
Two.
And sir, yes. Could you talk about, now you flew just the P-51 during the war?
Yes.
And you flew escort missions as well?
What?
What was the longest mission that you flew in the P-51?
Oh, I don't know the longest mission. We flew up out of Italy, flying over southern Germany. And usually the missions were 4 to 5 hours. But if it was a shorter mission than that, after you let the bombers go, you'd go down and strike German targets on the ground. That's the only time I fired my guns. I got over there late in the war. I got over there in February 1945. And I only flew 21 combat missions. But I was still 19 years of age at that time.
Wow.
I had my Rolls Royce when I was 19.
Yeah, maybe I'd ask too. Between both Tuskegee Airmen, what was your most difficult mission?
Well, nothing was difficult. We were well prepared. I think the most difficult was when sometimes the bomber group was spread out, and there may be some weather or clouds, and that made it more difficult to assure that they were protected and there was no loopholes that the Germans could come in and destroy any. So fortunately, as I say, we were well prepared and had the aircraft. Each squadron normally put up 16 aircraft. But as I say, sometimes that bomber group was well spread out, whether they all got off in time to join up to be in a tight formation. It varied some, so that made it perhaps a bit more difficult. Fortunately, over the highly defended German targets, we saluted the bombers because they had to ride and follow their lead bomber to be sure bombs on target. We could see where the anti-aircraft fire was mostly focused, and we could still do our job, climb another 1,000 feet or move out of little away from the bombers, but still do the job.
So when both of you were there, I believe that the Germans introduced a jet fighter called the ME-262. Did either of you two ever run across one in the air?
I had come home before that was in 1945, a little before the war ended, when they were defending Berlin. I had already come home, but the group did, with another group, shoot down the first of the ME-262s trying to defend Berlin. So the group got to, I've forgotten the name of the pilots that got the victories, but I had come home.
Hmm. And Colonel Hardy, now I understand that there's a tie to World War II here. After the war, you ended up flying B-29s in Korea, and the B-29 was the main Army Air Force's heavy bomber in the Pacific. Flying against Japan, you flew it in Korea. Could you talk a little bit about what it was like to fly the B-29?
Well, actually, after the war, I went to NYU for a year, came back in 48. And when I came back in, I went to electronics school, electronics maintenance. And in 49, racial integration took place. And I was assigned to the 19th Bomb Group on the island of Guam as a maintenance officer. But as a pilot, I also checked out in the B-29. And in 1950, I was put on a combat crew as a co-pilot. I still had my day job as a maintenance officer, but I flew missions. And when the Korean War started, we moved to Okinawa and started flying out of Okinawa. And so I got 45 combat missions in the B-29 there.
Wow.
And but the missions, quite often, the longest mission was 11 hours long.
Wow.
So it quite a number of hours in that. And it was a great tour, I thought. I made some very good friends. In fact, my last mission, 11 hours, I wasn't supposed to fly it. I wasn't supposed to fly, but the pilot, Lou B. Mallory, saw me and said, "George, are you flying tomorrow?" I said, "No." So I volunteered to fly as a co-pilot. And that was bombing the bridge across the Yalu, and the Chinese were shooting at us from the other side, but we had orders not to drop bombs over the middle of the bridge, because that was Chinese territory. And we came back, and so happened before we took off, I fractured my elbow. Getting out of the vehicle jerked and fractured my elbow. I didn't know it was fractured until after the mission. And on the way back, I got a shot of morphine, and I felt good for 5 hours. And we landed, and Lou said, "George, keep your seat." I said, "No, I'm ready to get up." And I got up, and then I like melted. And that's where it was. But no, the B-29 was a good airplane. I got to like it. You know, he talks about how cold it was in the B-17s. It was unpressurized. Well, B-29 was pressurized. We could be flying at 25,000 feet, minus 50 outside, in your shirt sleeves in the B-29. So it was a very comfortable airplane. They made a change in that respect.